Hey, Vinny, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
All right, we're deciding to have no opening segment to the show, so you don't get any of the fancy music or any of that stuff. But never mind that. We're going to talk about a lot tonight. We always have Jason Fitzgerald coming on from OverTheCap.com, so we're going to break down some contracts with him. Obviously, get into Wilkerson with him and Damon Sachs Harrison, Fitzpatrick, and all of that. We have some news to talk about, obviously, with Cromartie being cut, some more news about potential outside linebackers, and some people are talking about tight ends and what tight ends the Jets should get, or running backs, or potentially even cornerbacks. So we're gonna hit on all those topics tonight. But what's up, Vinny? How you doing, man?
Hey, another day, buddy. Another day closer to training camp. Another day closer to the combine. Another day closer to the draft. So, hey, you know, even with a broken arm, getting back and swinging things here at school, swamped, out of control with the work. But, hey, it's always fun talking Jets, even if it's for, only an hour or so. But, hey, let's get to it, baby.
Yeah, no, even though your arm kind of Thomas Davis's arm did before the Super Bowl, I saw the picture of it yesterday. It's pretty cool looking. So today, like I said, Jason Fitzgerald's coming out there. Everybody listen for that in the next couple of minutes. Hopefully the next 10 minutes he will call in. We'll break down some contracts with him. But we obviously had some big news, Vinny, this week with kicker Kyle Brinza. I don't know how to pronounce his name, was cut towards Achilles. So that's the biggest news of the week since we've been on last time. What do you think about that?
Hey, he's a young kicker. I mean, I watched some of his highlights from college. I mean, just to get a little background. The guy had a boot, but I mean, because hey, when you look at I love Nick Folk. I know you're not too high on him, but hey, the reality is that he's 31, coming off an injury to the only part of his body that he's making money off of, which is his right leg. So anytime you have an older type of kicker and a leg injury, who knows what can happen. And hey, things happen. Achilles, you tear your Achilles in a workout when you don't think it's going to happen. Those things just sucks. But hey, that was the news for a few days there. So we had to, just read that for freaking 3 days. That was just dandy. But hey, now we have some other topics to talk about. But hey, it is what it is. Hopefully Nick Folk is healthy by training camp.
Yeah. No, I'm kidding. Nick Folk is going to be the kicker next year, unless something unforeseen happens where somebody comes into camp and does really good and then he's replaced, which I doubt that because it seems like the team really likes him and he likes the team. So I think he'll be here. We're not going to have any of these scrubs lining up. So, and I'm kidding. Obviously the biggest news this week is Cromartie being cut. Vinny, what'd you think about it? We're probably not gonna be able to get into it a whole bunch because Jason's going to get on and we'll actually ask him about it. But obviously signed that 4-year, $32 million deal last year. Was very inconsistent beginning of the year. Games like the Browns, he was really bad in games like the Raiders, but then there was games like against the Eagles where I believe he didn't let up one receiving yard. So he was hot and cold, mostly cold during the beginning of the season, a little bit better towards the end of the season. Clean cut, $8 million off the cap, which is obviously a sign of it being a good sign by Mac. Obviously, to be able to get after, 1 year of having him, you can just completely clean cut, and he's not even existed in the Jets, payroll right now. So, what did you think about it, Vinny? Are you happy about it? Do you think it was the injuries? It's really his time to go. We've heard that the Jets are potentially open to a return in Cromartie. Went on his Instagram. I don't know if anybody goes on his Instagram. I don't follow him either, but I think somebody tweeted it. If you want to go on his Instagram and look at it, he has like a message to Jets fans and all that stuff. And I love Cromartie. He was one of the best Jets of my not childhood, but that corner tandem with him and Revis were really awesome in 2010 and all of that. So I loved Cromartie. He loved it here. So I'm sad to see him go, but it's time to move on, I think.
Yeah, I think when we all saw him sign that 4-year, $32 million contract, and we just see all the guaranteed money in the first year, we knew something was up in that. And that if he didn't perform well enough to an $8 to $10 million, paid cornerback, then he's just not going to be on the team. It was that simple. He's 31 years of age, and like you said, he was tweeting out videos of him and the practice guys, and him and Buster Screen, him and Darren Walls. They were going back and forth. So, I mean, it sucks. And you saw Revis tweet out that he's going to miss him. But like you said, it's time to move on. This we saw him and him and Revis to a point. You know, very inconsistent, especially during that last game when it mattered the most, when, you know, couldn't get a stop on third down. No one could. And, you know, this is a position where they have to get younger, and they have the guys, you know, they have players ready to step in. I think, you know, I think the Jets have the right, you know, right formula at cornerback. They have a bunch of young guys who can hopefully step up and, you know, perform well. But it's sad to see Cromartie go, like you said, because he loved being a Jet. You know, as a fan, you can't ask for much more than a player that loves to play for that team. And when you see that, you latch on to them. So it's always nice to see that, but it's gonna suck when we go to the game next year and we don't see him. So it is time to move on. You save $8 million in a time where you really need money. Like we're gonna get into with Jason Fitzgerald, this is a team that's strapped for cash right now, and you know it's gonna be very interesting to see with McCagnon. I know you mentioned a few times that this is his important. And, you know, it's only his second offseason at GM, but it's his most important because there's going to be a lot of tough decisions to make. And, hey, this was the first of, I think, several decisions that he's going to have to make.
So I'm guessing with, you know, Cromartie being older and his injuries, his inconsistencies, you heard that he is open to returning for a lesser price. Is there no lesser price he can take any, whether I don't think he'll take $1 million or $2 million, maybe let's just say $4 million. It's hypothetical, so okay. We have no idea what he means by lesser money, but yeah. So you're saying no if Cromartie wants to come back for $4 million as a starter/role player. I don't know how else they can use him other than starter unless they kind of switch him on and off with Marcus Williams, because Marcus Williams is a younger guy who has a little bit less experience, even though he did really go off this year for the snaps he played. Do you kind of have a tandem there, or are you comfortable with, you know, Marcus Williams? Mm-hmm. Are you comfortable with what's your deal with that?
When you look at the cornerback positions, there's a lot of depth there, and not really, you know, star-studded players like Marcus Williams, Dexter McDougal, D. Milner, and, you know, go down the list. It's not, you know, your ideal number two cornerback, but when you look at this team, and they had to be done. The cut had to be done. And you're saying, I saw the article you're talking about, how he's open to returning, but I think the only way Cromartie comes back is late after McCagnon makes all these, you know, what we think, deals, like we mentioned to begin the show, with Snacks, with Harrison, with Wilkerson, with Fitzpatrick. The only way I see Cromartie coming back is once all that's done and he's still out there, and, you know, it's a month or two before camp, if he's open to come back for, you know, a 1 year, 2 year, $5 to $8 million deal, because he's a guy who, let's face it, he's very athletic. Even at 31 years of age, he's very athletic. And, you know, you're talking about as a role player slash backup guy, he's a guy who can play, you know, I think he can play all over the field. You can even put him at safety a little bit. You can put him, you know, even press coverage and have some help over. So he's a very athletic guy, and, you know, he saw what he can do when he's out there, you know, returning kicks, which is something we haven't had since without Cromartie, there's really been no one that could really return a kick back there. So, I mean, he what he can do, but it's just money, man. He's not an $8 million player. He's not even close to that. So it's going to be interesting. But, again, you know, we don't know how much he wants, how much he's going to get. Because there's probably some teams who would, you know, pay $5 to $10 million a year for him, but the Jets can't be one of those teams.
Yeah, I think because of the cornerback position, the top two guys are older guys. I think the Jets are going to look to either get younger at the position, whether that be through the draft or in free agency, or just getting younger by starting a guy in Marcus Williams who was very, very productive. Cromartie had 898 defensive snaps compared to Marcus Williams, 285. Cromartie had 29 tackles, 12 pass deflections, 0 picks, 0 forced fumbles, 0 sacks, and 1 fumble recovery, while Marcus Williams had 27 tackles, 10 pass deflections, 6 picks, 1 forced fumble, a sack and a half, and a fumble recovery. So almost the same numbers when Marcus Williams is on the field for, what, almost a third less than – I mean two-thirds less than Cromartie is, so – It helps that you have a guy like that waiting in the wings who is an undrafted guy who's not costing you any money. I don't think they look to bring Cromartie back at a lesser deal, because I think you roll out with one of the younger guys, like I said, whether that's Marcus Williams through the free agency, a guy like Janoris Jenkins, even though I doubt them signing a cornerback because of so many other holes in the team. And then another thing is, too, you have Screen, who, let's not forget, with the Browns, was playing on the outside, was next to Joe Hayden, and had some decent or had a decent year. So he's versatile, so that helps a little bit, too, where maybe if Marcus Williams is struggling a little bit on the outside, you put him on the outside, and then you put a guy, like we're talking about, a Dexter McDougal in the slot, and you see how that works out. So they're going to play around with it a little bit. That'll be obviously interesting to see how that goes through training camp, battles, signings, drafted guys, whoever it may be. But Vinny, we are now joined by Jason Fitzgerald from OverTheCap.com. Thank you so much, Jason, for joining us, which is probably a very, very busy time for you with free agency coming up and all that, and tags and all this stuff. So we really do thank you for coming on.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Awesome. So I'm going to start off now. The Jets obviously had the right around $11 million in cap space. They cut Cromartie, so they're right around $18, $19, $20 million, I believe. You're the expert on that, so I can ask you. How much more room do you see the Jets potentially creating before re-signing some of their own guys and going into free agency with cuts to guys like Jeremy Curley, Jeff Cumberland, Breno Giacomini, who I believe is going to be $4 million in cap space. So how much room do you really see the Jets being able to get here before March 9th?
Well, probably a lot of it's going to depend on if they decide to restructure some contracts or really push the issue on pay cuts for certain players. They don't really have a lot of money that they're going to gain, I think, by cutting players at this point, unless they cut DeBrickashaw Ferguson. Some of those guys that you mentioned, like the Jeremy Curleys and the Jeff Cumberlands of the world, they'll save you, $2 million, $1 million here and there. But it's not really big money that you're going to save. Giacomini would be one. He'll save about $4.4 million. I don't know if they're going to release him right away. The line is such a problem, I think, for the Jets. I could see them waiting almost all the way to the draft to see if they get a replacement before they would just go out and just drop him completely. If I had to guess a number for where they would be, I'd guess they'd probably end up somewhere around $27 million in cap room before free agency starts.
All right. You mentioned, Jason, again, this has been here talking. Thanks again for joining us here on Jet Nation Radio. I just want to talk about, you mentioned a line. You mentioned a guy in DeBrickashaw Ferguson. Now, this is a guy who's been on the Jets, a decade long, and he's due $14.1 million this year. I want to ask, through your experience, how tough is it to, negotiate, a pay cut with a player who's been on a team for so long, like DeBrickashaw Ferguson and the Jets?
It can be a tricky situation. Ferguson is a former first-round draft pick, so basically he's made pretty good money his whole career. When you're talking about someone who's been in the league for as long as him, sometimes those players, when approached about pay cuts, will opt for retirement instead of, taking a significant pay cut. So in that respect, it can be kind of tricky because you're really trying to, gauge where the player is at in terms of how much longer he wants to keep playing. Sometimes you'll have to do what the Steelers have done in the past, which is they take veteran players, whether it's a Heath Miller or a Troy Polamalu, and they'll take the salary that the player is going to earn this year, and they'll basically guarantee that money for the season, and they'll add on a couple years on the contract, and maybe they play those years out, maybe they don't, and the overall new years that they'll add will be much more realistic money for the player is at. I would lean towards the Jets probably trying to do that. I think as long as his salary is somewhere in line, I think his actual salary this year is probably about $10 million. His cap number is over 14. So I think probably if they're in the ballpark somewhere between $7 and $10 million in actual cash that they pay him in some manner this year, I think they could probably get a deal done to keep him here and bring his numbers down this year, and next year they're very high too. But it's not an easy one, and the Jets aren't helped by the fact that there is no other option. And that hurts as well if, if someone really wants to call your bluff in a negotiation. You have to be willing at that point to probably walk away from the player. And I don't know if the Jets would be willing to do that or not.
Yeah, it's a tough situation because DeBrickashaw Ferguson, like Vinny said, is a veteran on this team. But this year he really, really declined. Just this week in Bleacher Report's top 35 left tackles, which I know doesn't, you know, mean everything, but he was number 31 out of 35. So with him being paid at the most at left tackle, it's scary. So the Jets are put in a tough situation. But another tough situation on offense is the Jets situation with running back, with both Powell and Ivory and even Stephen Ridley now being free agents. So we've been discussing it, you know, Powell versus Ivory, how much money, the yards, all that. But just from the money standpoint, what would both of their contracts be around? Do you think they can get in the open market or from the Jets? What are their contracts going to look like in your opinion?
Earlier this year, I kind of thought Ivory would probably be in that range of $4 million a season. He might still be there. The way his injuries have been really throughout his career and then this season, the way they would just pop up out of nowhere, I kind of feel like that's hurt him in terms of his earning potential. I can't recall so many players that, you know, would come in for a series and then cramp up and end up on a bike for the next two quarters. That's not normal to see happen. But I think that's kind of a big knock on his career. So I almost feel like unless a team is, I don't know, just really, really expecting his health to somehow change, I almost think he's going to be more in the $3 million range. Powell should be right around $2 million to $2.5 million. He missed some time, obviously, this year, too. I don't think that's as big of a knock on him as it is on Ivory, who has really had that his whole career. But he's basically a third-down specialist kind of player. Usually those players go for about $2 million, $2.5 million at the most. So I would think that's probably where the markets are. If I had to put a bet on it, I think the Jets would probably bring back Powell before Ivory. I just think Ivory's too unreliable for them, and they'd be better off going in the draft or trying to find just a running back off the scrap heap or something and plug him in for the time that Ivory would normally play.
Yeah, that's what both me and Vinny have been talking about recently. That's a great point that the Jets would probably keep Powell over Ivory because Powell is a big part of this offense. And like you said, Ivory with his inconsistencies with being injured, and even when he's playing when he's injured, he's still inconsistent on the field sometimes. So Jets fans have been talking about matching Bilal Powell with a guy from free agency or from the draft for a couple of weeks now. And the three names you've been hearing the most probably at running back have been Matt Forte, Doug Martin, and Lamar Miller. What would you see those three guys contracts being around? Would it be realistic for the Jets to bring them in, or in my opinion, you kind of they're gonna have to stay away from the bigger guys like the Fortes and the Martins because they don't have a lot of cap room available to even sign them.
Well, you know, all those players, the running back market is pretty tight, where a lot of guys get the same amount of money. Doug Martin is an ultimate boom or bust kind of player. I don't know if the Jets should go there. He's probably going to be the most expensive of the three. I would think he might be able to get $6 million, maybe a little above that, since salary cap keeps rising. The other players, Lamar Miller, probably around $5 million. Forte is probably going to be right around $4-4.5 million. That's generally where the veteran players towards the end of their career go. If the Jets are really going to look at a veteran player to pair with Powell, I think I would probably take a look at Alfred Morris from the Redskins. He's basically your two-down back with Powell being your third-down back then. Because Morris really wasn't used at all this year, he doesn't have the same wear and tear some of the other people have. And because he fell out of favor, he doesn't have that, that big name value anymore attached to him that Doug Martin was able to regain this year with a 1,400-yard season, or Lamar Miller has had by being a pretty consistent player around those 1,000 yards. So I think Morris you might be able to get for under $4 million, and I actually think that might not be a terrible fit for them.
Yeah, no, that would be actually nice, you know, a nice little thunder and lightning combo. But staying on the offense with this Jets team, and when you look at, you know, the last 10 to 15, and really the last 40 years, actually, if you really think about it, the quarterback position has been such a struggle. And, you know, to get Ryan Fitzpatrick in on the deal that they got him in, you know, they traded him, traded with the Texans on draft day to get him, and you know he breaks basically almost every record imaginable as a Jets quarterback. He's 33 years old, he's a veteran, and he's hit the open market. You know, we've seen ballpark numbers that, you know, Jets going to try to get a nice 2-year deal with $20 million or somewhere around that. So, know, how big is the market open right now? Because there's a lot of teams looking for a quarterback, and a guy like Fitz, who just had a, you know, pretty damn good year. What would you say, you know, that Fitz can get in the open market?
That's another good question. You know, Fitzpatrick has been around so long.
Yeah.
You know, this is a player that's been cut by the Titans. He was effectively cut by the Texans, and these are teams with no quarterbacks.
Yep.
The Bills, earlier in his career, you know, the Bengals, I think he was on the Rams
when
he started, maybe. So, I mean, he's been around. So players like that usually are not going to be in high demand off of one season.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot different when it's a Kirk Cousins type in his mid-20s, has that
mm-hmm.
kind of season versus a veteran player. That doesn't mean he won't get interest. I mean, Josh McCown was able to get $5 million based on a couple games in Chicago a couple years ago. So I would think his market would probably be in that $8 million range, maybe a little bit higher.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the Jets want to make sure that he doesn't leave, $10 million is not bad. I think as long as they keep the contract at 2 years, I think they'll be fine. I think what you just don't want to get into with him is anything longer term than that. Players like Fitzpatrick, you know, they're players that excite a fan base today, and then 2 weeks into the season next year, you're calling for them to be replaced. Reminds me a bit of Chad Pennington in that regard. You know, kind of the same thing, a lot of physical limitations there. Both are gamers, they're energizers. You can get behind them when things have really been bad for a while, but then you start to look at the big picture with them, and the deficiencies really start to stand out. And you saw that with Pennington, you know, in 2005 and in 2007. You know, he had teams that made the playoffs the year before, and, you know, before he got hurt in 2005 and in 2007, pretty much the whole time around, as soon as he throws that first interception, and it's like talking about the water gun arm and the things they can't do, everyone turns on them. And it's not just the fans. I mean, the front offices think the same as everybody else a lot of times. And, you know, he was replaced. He was going to get replaced probably in 2005. And certainly in 2007, he was replaced by Kellen Clemens. And then, you know, they still looked to upgrade with Brett Favre after that. So I think there's a lot of similarities there. And I think you just don't want to get into that long-term deal where, you know, a couple games into it, you bang your head against the wall and say, why did we do that? So I think as long as you stay on those 2 years, you'll be okay.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting to see how that plays out with Fitzpatrick, because the Jets pretty much have to have Fitzpatrick back unless they feel like going with Petty or Geno or RG3 or one of these guys. So that's going to be a very interesting, you know, contract to watch and see how much he gets. But another position that the Jets are talking about, you know, Jets fans are talking about, along with quarterback and running back right now, are offensive line and outside linebacker. They're talking about who to sign, you know, the Connor Barwins, the Bruce Irvins, that offensive line, all these guys who are available. So just looking at the positions in general in free agency, what position do you think out of offensive line and outside linebacker has more to offer in terms of you know, depth of players, more players available who will be, you know, bargain deals or good deals, you know, either on the either outside linebacker or on the offensive line?
I think you can probably find players on the offensive line. I don't think this is a very deep group of players that are going to be able to stand up and rush the passer. I don't think you're going to find a lot of value there. You know, it's unfortunate because the Jets clearly need somebody. You know, they can't go out there with Calvin Pace again, you know, in a rush position. But unfortunately, you know, those kind of players that can make that kind of impact, if they make free agency, they're incredibly expensive, and most of them never make free agency. You can find some players on the line. I mean, there's some right tackles out there that you can probably get that might not cost a fortune that would be pretty decent. There might be some guards that you can find if you look to upgrade on some of the guard positions. It's not a great group on the line this year, but I think you might be able to find some people. But I would be surprised if the Jets found someone to play linebacker. If the Jets found someone to play linebacker that really excelled in it, I think it would be a surprise to everybody. It would be a one of those kind of players you just never saw coming. That was brought in to probably be a situational player, and they just ended up exceeding expectations.
Yeah, you know, and staying, you know, you mentioned linebackers, but, you know, a position that's been strong for the Jets the past few years has been this defensive line. And, you know, you got two free agents pending, and that's Mo Wilkerson and big Damon Harrison's next. We know the situation with Mo Wilkerson, how he had a broken leg last game of the year, which obviously is unfortunate. But I want to ask you, they've been talking about doing a tag, around $15.5 million for Muhammad Wilkerson. And then, that he wants that big $100 million contract. So I just wanted to ask you, with him and then also Damon Harrison Snacks, how he's, he thinks he's the best nose tackle in the game. So I just want to get your take on, what the situation is with Muhammad Wilkerson. Do you see teams going out there and trying to execute the franchise tag and trade, or do you see a team like the Jets investing that $100 million into a guy who just broke his leg the last game of the season? And, we've been asking you about all these guys because the Jets have so many holes they have to fill. It's kind of funny after a team that just won 10 games has all these holes, coming up in this offseason. So I just want to answer your question on Mo and then on, what's the market for the nose tackle? Because, it's a tricky position, when you plug in a guy that size, he's not going to fill up the stat sheet, but he's probably the most important player on this Jets team.
Wilkerson is going to get big money. I don't think the broken leg is going to be an issue. I think teams are much more concerned if someone really damages a knee than a broken bone. I think the bones are not really too much of a problem. I think the Jets have to explore trades with Wilkerson. I think the ship has kind of sailed on being able to extend him on a reasonable contract. That needed to be done 2 years ago. If they do it now, they're really going to pay through the nose for him. They're going to lose a lot of cap flexibility down the line, probably, if they do that now. The way I look at it, if you can get a high draft pick for him, maybe you can't.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can get a high draft pick for him, if you look at the performance that you might get from that draft pick, the fact that you'll be saving $15 million right now to spend both in real dollars and against the salary cap, you're basically going to trade him at that point for probably three starters. And when you just look overall at the roster and the quality of players on the roster, I think the Jets are better off being able to bring in three quality starters or more than just having Wilkerson. Wilkerson's been a very good player for the team, but unfortunately that position is usually not that kind of a difference maker. Jets haven't been successful because Wilkerson is been here. It's not that he's the fault that they're not successful either. It's just that I don't see how you can make that a priority when there's so many other spots on the team that need to be filled. The Jets have other players in Richardson and Leonard Williams that can play the positions. Both, Richardson is incredibly good. Obviously, he's got to keep his nose clean. Williams looked like he was, definitely going to be a very good player. So I almost think the Jets are in a position where they really need to try and trade Wilkerson. I think you can probably get a late first-round pick for him, maybe some early second-round picks even. I would probably do that if I were them. And I would think that's where they're headed because I have to think if they were going to re-sign him, they would have done it at some point this year. They spent their money in so many other spots rather than on him. I just have to think that their line of thinking is that they're going to be able to turn him into some other type of assets. As for Snacks, that's another one of those tough positions. Mm-hmm. If he can sell himself as a 4-3 defensive tackle, he can probably make anywhere from $8 to $9 million, would be my guess. But he's got to sell himself that way. That's not the easiest thing sometimes to do. The 3-4 nose tackle, especially someone in his case who's basically a 50% snap guy,
They
usually don't command that kind of money. They're usually in the range of $5 million, $5.5 million. He's not going to have those traits of rushing a passer. But the best comparable I can come up with him, even though the draft status isn't the same, but Dan Williams signed out in Oakland last year for just under $7 million, and he was coming off a season in Arizona where he probably was only playing about 40% of the snaps, was clearly nothing more than a rotational guy. They were able to sell him as someone who could do a lot more than that in a different type of system, and that worked for him. And I could see the same thing happening for Harrison with certain teams out there. He's such a good run defender. He would immediately help you with that. The question just becomes then at that point, if he's in there more snaps, if he does play 70% of the snaps, can he develop any type of pass rush, especially in a 4-3 system where you're given a little bit more freedom to go after the quarterback. So I've started to think that he's probably going to be a little more expensive than I thought and a lot of people thought earlier on, just because of the money that's out there. And I think the willingness that teams now have to kind of take a leap of faith that when you move a player out of a certain type of defensive scheme, that he can still excel.
Yeah, great point about Wilkerson, too, that in my opinion, and obviously in Vinny's and even yours, I figured, is that you have three guys, you have three, four defensive ends for two positions, and you have holes at outside linebacker and offensive line, so it's not the smartest thing to pay a guy when you're overstacked at that position, rather trade him and get that money for the players in free agency and the draft pick. So it that's going to be very fun to watch over the next coming weeks. But we're talking about Wilkerson, and we're talking about Harris, and we're talking about Fitzpatrick, and a lot of fans think that they're going to sign all these guys, and they're going to sign Jimmy Graham, and I've heard some crazy names, but I'm not sure if after they signed Wilkerson, Harrison, and Fitzpatrick, they can even sign, Aaron Henderson. So if it did come to fruition, the Jets signed all three of these guys, would they have any cap at all after that, or very minimum, or could they make some room, like you said, with the Jeff Cumberland cuts, the potentially Giacomini restructuring Brick? So how much room do they really have if they can get these three guys back, or do they even have enough room to even do that?
My opinion is that really, if they bring all those players back, I think that's pretty much it for the year. I don't think that they can go out and do much more than that. Now, there are ways that they can create that money. If they are strictly going to just defer money to next year, I mean, they can create a couple million dollars with Brandon Marshall. They can create a couple million dollars with Nick Mangold. And then the big one is they can create a ton of money with Darrell Revis. That they can go in those spots if there's someone that they really, really want to go after. The problem, I think, when you do that is you put yourself in a position down the line where you're kind of where the Bills are this year, where you really have to cut players left and right then next season just to scramble to have the cap space. You get into a position where you're going to be restructuring a lot of contracts in the future to make it work. But you can always manipulate the cap to bring players in if you choose to do that. So I guess if there are players that they really want, they have avenues to create that cap space to do it. I don't think it would be advisable. I don't think that they'll do it. They were so active in free agency and the trades and everything last year. Usually those teams back off the year thereafter. But they can do it if they want to. So that there's ways that they can be active.
Awesome. And last question for you, too, real quick, is that a lot of fans in recent weeks have been talking about moving the money around with the Revis contract. Do you think that the Jets would pursue something like that, or what would the contract look like with that, or do you think it would be just smart for the Jets to just sit where they are now with the Revis contract?
I think you have to bite the bullet with the Revis contract. I wouldn't touch that deal at all. Revis is not, he's not a top corner anymore. He's still a good player, but he's not the player that was here in 2009 and 2010. I thought he struggled a lot against some of those younger players, even if the passes weren't completed. A lot of times that was just the quarterbacks and the coaching staff showing a lot of respect for Revis, more so than the what was actually shown on the field. When teams go back and review that film, I think I'll attack Revis more this year. You don't want to put yourself into a position where you're absolutely locked into Revis next year for another huge amount of money. He has a guarantee next year for, I think, $6 million. There is an offset in there, so that gives the Jets some leverage to bring his salary down. If they go in there and they restructure his contract this year, which would bring his dead money up to very high figures next year, they would completely lose that leverage with him in 2017. And I think the Jets have to prepare for the fact that, Revis is not a $16, $15, $14 million player anymore. You deal with it this year. You deal with the big cap charge. And then you revisit it based on how he played the following season, and you can bring his cap number down. hopefully to a more reasonable figure. You know, and you can get by with him probably in that kind of that stage where he's going to be transitioning from a really good number one to more of a solid number two kind of player on the team. So I think the Jets would be wise to just let it play out the way it was, the way they signed it, the way they intended it to be, rather than really getting, you know, too antsy with the free agents and saying, well, you know, we can touch Revis's deal and create $12 million this year, and, you know, we'll deal with the issues in 2017 and 2018 when they come. So I wouldn't touch it. I don't think they'll touch it. But you never know. Free agency teams can do crazy things when a certain player becomes available.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. They just have to bite the bullet as now and, like you said, revisit it. But we definitely appreciate you coming on, Jason, dumping a whole bunch of knowledge all over us and to our fans. And before you go, just, you know, share with our followers and the people who listen where to follow you, your Twitter, the website they can follow you at, your, you know, social security number, address, personal phone number, that kind of stuff.
All right. So you can find most of my work at overthecap.com. That's pretty much where we'll put up all the salary cap information for the teams around the league. The numbers are pretty accurate. You know, there's going to be a couple mistakes here and there, but you can follow, obviously, the Jets stuff. I'm a Jets fan, so every now and then you'll see some Jets-specific posts that go a little bit beyond the salary cap stuff and just into ranting on the Jets and whatever kind of stuff that they're doing there. You can follow me on Twitter at Jason_OTC. Usually I try and do some salary cap Q&A here and there if I have some time. And, you know, usually try and get to everyone's questions if I can do that. So you can check me out there.
Awesome. We really do appreciate your time, Jason. And maybe after free agency, when all the contracts are signed, we can get you back on and talk about the contracts that they did sign.
Sounds good.
All right,
awesome.
Thanks,
thank
man.
You.
Have a good night, guys.
You too, bud.
Thanks, Dick. All right, Vinny, so that was a great interview by Jason.
Nice guy.
Nice guy. Makes some great points about Wilkerson and Fitzpatrick. He's actually saying right from, you know, right around $8-10 million, which we thought it would be a little bit higher. So that's nice to hear. But at the same time, getting some bad news about Damon Harrison that Dan Williams got, you know, at $7 million last year when Snacks is the better overall player. So, like I said, it's going to be very interesting. It's coming up very soon. It's already, what, February 22nd, 23rd? I don't even know what the date is right now.
23rd, man. Woo!
All right, yeah. So it's coming up. The Jets only have a couple more days, or I believe it's until – is it March 1st or the 3rd where they can tag people until so we'll see what happens with that. But let's revisit what we were talking about with cornerback Finney, talking about Cromartie being cut. We were saying, you know, 31 injuries, inconsistent, wouldn't really want to sign him back and let guys like Marcus Williams play and screen play. And I was making my point about screen's versatility. Are you comfortable with Marcus Williams and screen and his versatility and Dexter McDougal and even a guy in Darren Wallace who has to be re-signed? Or are you one of those fans who was talking about signing maybe a guy, you know, the corner market's kind of dry this year from what I saw. It doesn't really look too great. You know, the Leon Hall, Sean Smith from Kansas City, Prince Mukamaro is probably a decent number. Adam Jones, don't want him. Josh Robinson, Minnesota's decent, you know, Janoris Jenkins. There's some names, but are you really looking to free agency, or are you just looking at the roster, maybe a guy in the fourth, fifth round?
I mean, when you look at Buster Screen's contract, you look at how much he's making. So he's getting paid like a starter. You know, I think next year's cap, or this upcoming season's cap hit's like $7.5 million, something like that. We've seen earlier in the year last year how good Buster Screen can play, you know, when the right system, when he's in the right fit, when he can play in that slot. And like you mentioned earlier, he can play on the outside like he did in Cleveland. So when I look at this with this roster, I mean, Buster Screen is a young guy. He's 26 years old. You look at Marcus Williams, he's young, undrafted guy who had 6 picks for us last year. When you factor those two guys in and you factor what we just talked about for the last half hour, I don't think the Jets can go out there and sign a quarterback like a Leon Hall, like a Sean Smith, because those guys are veterans. They've been around. And, you know, you're not going to get them on a $2 million deal. You know, you're going to get them from a 5 to 10, you know, a 5 to whatever the case is. But it's not going to be cheap for that way. And if Jason is right and he thinks the Jets are going to have, you know, around $26, $27 million in cap space when free agency comes around, you're telling me you're going to put $5 million into a cornerback position where you have all those guys? I don't think so. When you need a guy to get to the quarterback when you need some running backs and you need help on the line, when you need help all over the place. So, I mean, it's at this cornerback position, you know, and they got to bite the bullet with Revis. You're paying him an absurd amount of money. He's got to hope he bounces back next year. And you got to hope that, you know, that Buster Screen plays the way he played the first 7-8 games or so, because early on we thought this guy was going to be, you know, a stud. We thought this guy was going to be a Pro Bowl type of player in his first year with the Jets. And he was to a point early on, and you know, he played well during that 5-game win streak towards the end when everyone did. So it's a position where if Buster Screen has to play outside, I think he can, because, like you said, he played pretty well. That earned him a 4-year, $25 million contract when he was with Cleveland. So you have him, you have Marcus Williams. I'm pretty content with the cornerback position right now. And just to harp on one more time, is because I think that these safeties, we haven't talked about the safeties in a while, I think the safeties are going to help a lot more if there is no more Cromartie, there is no more Cromartie. So they're going to have to, you know, play like they did last year. I think that won't be a problem. So I think the secondary is pretty content if I'm the Jets right now.
Yeah, but it's a position that the Jets might look at in the draft look to get younger. No, I understand. Like this year, yeah, they might be content, but at the same time, if there's a guy who falls to the fourth, fifth round who you really like, who you think should be a third round pick, you take him and then you let him obviously develop behind Revis because he's getting older. Screen is young, but not crazily young, so we'll see what happens with that. But, you know, continuing about free agency, Vinny, I've been hearing some things now that the Jets are really looking to bring back Powell. Obviously, these are rumors, and I always tell you they're smoke screens, so yeah. I can't even believe what I'm saying right now that I'm even reading stuff. But just for, you know, the point of discussing it, it seems like the Jets are going to bring back Powell, and Ivory is going to be gone. Like I said, not sure, it could be a smoke screen. But if let's just say the Jets did just bring back Powell and Ivory is gone, just with the cornerback situation, how Cromartie's gone, are you looking at free agency, which is it's an all right class free agency?
Right.
You have Alfred Morris, who Jason mentioned,
mean.
He had 202 rushes, 3.5 average, 751 yards. Who he was bad. He wasn't good last year. He was all right, but his mm-hmm. 4 years before or his 3 years before that, you know, his first year had 1,600 yards, 13 touchdowns, and like 1,300 with 10 touchdowns. So he's been on a steady decline every single year. You have guys like Starks, who were number two back, 148 rushes for 601 yards, a 4.1 average. Droyke Bell, no. I've watched the Lions play. He's terrible. So are you signing a running back? Are you signing one of those guys? Or are you looking in the draft for that too? Because think about it. If you don't sign one of these guys and then the draft goes by, you get in a bad position where all the running backs you want are gone before you pick. Obviously not in the first round, but the second, third round, you're kind of in a sticky situation. So what are you doing at running back if just Powell signs back?
Yeah, well, when you look at this Jets team, you know, and you look at all the changes they made this past year, you know, you got the Brandon Marshall in, and, you know, that steadily emerged as, you know, perhaps the best duo in football with over 2,600 yards and what it was, like 26 touchdowns, whatever it was insane. But when it came down to the last game of the year and the Jets could not run the ball, what happened? You saw what happened, and they lost. I'm not saying this team is that heavily, you know, on the running back position, but they kind of are. They kind of need that guy. You can't have a running back by committee if they're not good. Like we saw with Stephen Ridley late in the year, like we saw early on in the year, what the Jets were doing at running back. So if you're telling me the Jets are going to get Wall Powell back and you're not going to sign one of these guys, like you said, I mean, there's some names out there, but again, these are guys, you know, they're free agents for a reason. You know, the Droyke Bell is a free agent for a reason. You know, all these guys are out there because their team doesn't want them. You know, what else is free agency? And, you know, you can't afford them, but the Jets can afford one of these guys. They can afford a Alfred Morris. They can afford a James Starks. But if you're saying a Derrick Henry falls to the Jets in the second round at the 51st pick, I mean, I don't think that's going to happen, but say that does happen, I think the Jets would be dumb if they don't take him. You know, I mean, it's a position where they need a guy. You know, I know you like to talk about this running back. You know, you get two guys, you get a James Starks, and you know, have him a Bilal Powell. But I mean, the Jets need a guy to give 15 to 20 carries a game, and if they don't have that, they're going to be in trouble. So I mean, can they get Chris Ivory back at $4 million like Jason said? that's something the Jets would have to look at if, you know, if they want to go that route. But, I mean, this is a position. This is one of the most important positions on this team. I mean, it seems like every position the Jets have, they have a problem at. And for the most part, you know, with an exception of a few, like safety, like wide receiver, this is a team that needs to build on all these, you know, all these positions. And running back, in my opinion, with offensive line is the most important, because just look at this last year. Look at the previous years. Look how, you know, when the Jets don't win, what's usually the problem? Not getting to the quarterback and not running the football. So, again, it's a position the Jets have to do something. They have, you know, Bilal Powell, there's not that many pass-receiving running backs in the free agents market. You got him, you know, you got Reggie Bush, who's 30 years old. He's been hurt the last few years. No. I think Bilal Powell is the most, you know, versatile running back out there in the market. You know, maybe with the, you know, yeah, Matt Forte as well. So I take that back. But
have Lamar Miller and Doug Martin, obviously. But I think they're going to be priced out.
Exactly. So I mean, if you're saying a Derrick Henry or you know one of these guys fall to the Jets in the second round, I think they can go that route. But right now, man, it's I'm not sure if that's a Jets priority right now, because they have so much going on with the Mo, with the snacks. I mean, this has to be a priority to get someone in, because they have no one right now, man. They don't have a running. You know, it's not pretty, but I think you know we're gonna be talking about this for a while. Like you just said, it's only the 23rd of February, so I mean time is coming up, but it's gonna be through before we know it, and it's gonna be very. You talk about interesting topics to talk about. This is something we're gonna be talking about until something goes on, because this is a position that the Jets got to do something at, man.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and you just mentioned mid-February, by the way, or February 23rd. If people can hear the wind, I've told people that I'm in a basement, and it's like a wind tunnel here, and my fingers are freaking pink right now because it's freezing. But with running backs, Derrick Henry, I think he's going to be a guy who can shoot up or shoot down, because I'm not the biggest fan of him, because, like I said, I like the more versatile guys, especially coming off of Ivory, only being able to do one thing. So Derrick Henry, I can see him being early second to mid-second all the way down to maybe mid-third. So we'll see where he ends up. But if they can get one of these guys, a Morris, a James Starks, and for, you know, Jason said around $2.5 million for Powell. So if they can get, you know, let's say they get a Alfred Morris for $2.5 million, or James Starks for $2.5 million, you have two guys. And then in the draft, you know, obviously your main concerns are quarterback, outside linebacker, and offensive line. But you know, fourth, fifth round, if they pick up or they see a guy who they like, pick him up, and then you run a three-headed monster. Not really a monster, but a three-headed Powell, Starks, and whoever it may be, with Zach Stacy as a backup. I think that's a decent running back position. I don't think it would be the strongest in the league, but I think it would be capable of doing what the Jets need to do, especially if they upgrade the offensive line, which is the oldest offensive line in football. So let's work on that, please, God. But staying on this trend, Vinny, you know, looking at running back, cornerback, and all of this, moving on to tight end. We've talked about it before, so we never really looked at the tight end market, but today I want to look at the tight end market, where we've talked about it before, where we have a Nwosu H-back who, you know, people call him a wide receiver still, but he's kind of in the middle. We've talked about it, blah, 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 blah. Everyone knows the story on that. We've been talking about it for months. And then you have Jason Mara coming back, who, like I said, led all rookies tight ends the year he played, you know, receptions, touchdowns, et cetera. Are you happy with that going into next year? Are you looking for a guy in the fifth, sixth round, which we talked about last week about being a secondary need, or are you looking at the market, like we're talking about with running backs? Mercedes Lewis, he's too old, I think. Jared Cook just cut by the Rams, 39 receptions, 481 yards, no touchdowns though last year. He's an interesting name to watch. And then you have guys like Ladarius Green from the Chargers, 37 receptions, 429 yards, 4 touchdowns last year. And then a guy who you mentioned a couple weeks ago, I believe, was Jermaine Gresham, who was on the Bengals, was solid for a while, went to the Cardinals or last year, struggled a little bit, 18 receptions, 223 yards, 1 touchdown, when he was averaging about, you know, I forget what it was, 50, it was like 50 receptions, 500 yards, and 5 touchdowns with the Bengals. So are you looking at one of those guys or a different guy? Are you looking at the draft? Are you leaving it alone? What are you doing?
Like you said, this is a kind of a secondary need, but, you know, two guys I want everyone to keep their names on. You know, that situation out there in Indianapolis with Dwayne Allen and Kobe Fleener, are two young guys who were drafted in the same class, you know, 4 years ago, 5 years ago. They're both free agents. You know, I've been just keeping an eye on that situation. You know, I'm seeing that they're going to sign one of the two, leaving one obviously still a free agent. I mean, I like both those guys. I mean, Kobe Fleener obviously is the more better one. But when you look at the Jets tight end position, what they have on paper as of right now, like you said, Jason Morrow, I mean, we saw glimpses, his rookie year, like that game against Denver at home where he had that nice touchdown over T.J. Ward back of the end zone. You know, and he had a game where he had 10 catches in a game his rookie year, and there was a lot going on, you know, with Rex and everything. And then we saw when Rex left and how he talked about how, you know, he bashed Jason Morrow. But, I mean, that's just Rex being Rex. But, I mean, this is a guy who I think when he's healthy, he can be a force on this offense. Not necessarily a force on different teams, but when you look at the Jets personnel, and let's just say hypothetically to get back Powell and, you know, get another running back that can be serviceable, like an Alfred Morris or so, right? So you figure the Jets have a decent attack at the running back position. Then you look at this wide receiver core of Decker, Marshall. You get Devin Smith back early, hopefully, you know, whenever that case is. You know, maybe he gets on the pup list, whatever case is. You factor those two guys with Quincy Nua, with the running back position, and then you have Jason Morrow. So, I mean, at Jason Morrow right there, if he can get one-on-one opportunities with anybody, really, when you think about it, a linebacker, a safety, or a cornerback, he's bigger than all of those guys. So when you factor in the Brandon Marshall, the Decker on the outsides, and you have – you know, whoever the Jets get as a slot receiver, I think Jason Morrow can repeat, and if not, you know, have bigger numbers than what he did his rookie campaign, because it's a guy who, you know, like coming out of the draft. You know, I know we were both high on him coming out of the draft because we've seen it. You know, he was a guy who was playing in a spread offense there at Texas Tech and having, you know, 120 catches, 10 touchdowns, 1,500 yards. Yeah. You know, all the accolades you want to see, you know, a guy on your team have. And then when the Jets draft him, I know this is kind of something we're not used to. We're not used to a tight end who can do those types of things. You know, closest thing we had to that was Dustin Keller, you know, 5-6 years ago when he was good his first
Chris
2 years.
Baker.
But, I mean, Chris Baker, I mean, you got some guys. We haven't had Anthony Beck was a last decent tight end, really. So, I mean, if he can come back healthy, I mean, that shoulder injury can be tricky. But you mentioned Jermaine Gresham. You mentioned guys like Jared Cook. I mean, those are guys, I think Mercedes Lewis even, he's 31 years old, he's a bit older, but he was in Jacksonville his whole career. I mean, if they can get a veteran not named Kellen Davis to come in and maybe, you know, be productive, I mean, if that has to be the case, then do it. But like you said, no way this team drafts a tight end within the first, you know, 4 or 5 rounds, unless there's, you know, a guy who slips into the, you know, into like the 4th or 5th round. That's the only way I see it, because again, we're going to be talking about it all offseason long. This team has a bunch of needs, man. Tight end just being one of those secondary needs.
Yeah, and you're talking about the running back and the third options and the options the Jets will have with Amaro coming back, Anunwa, with another year under his belt, Powell being basically the third receiving option with the Jets, so he's going to be important. Hopefully Devin Smith does come back and be that number two receiver on the outside, but the number three receiver in targets and things like that. Hopefully that happens. You mentioned Kobe Fleener. I'm not the biggest fan of Kobe Fleener. Just like with running back, I don't want a guy who can just do one thing as Kobe Fleener can just receive. I want a guy like Jermaine Gresham where he can block and catch the ball, because obviously Jason Morrow came from the spread system with Texas Tech, so he is not going to be 100% comfortable with blocking. So having him not experienced in that field, I would like a guy who can be an all-around guy, like I said, a Gresham type of guy. But I don't see it being a primary need because, like we said, Amaro is coming back, and Anunwa is having another year in his belt. So if you do sign a guy like Jermaine Gresham, how are you fitting him, Anunwa, and Amaro into the same scheme with Brandon Marshall, Decker, and Powell, and all of these guys? So it's going to be interesting, but I don't see it as a primary need. If they see a guy who's willing to take, you know, a really good deal and he wants to come here or whatever, which is unlikely because it doesn't happen a lot where people aren't constantly thinking about money. I don't see the Jets signing anybody, though. I kind of feel like they stick with Amaro and Anunwa as their two guys. And then, obviously, you know, if a lesser guy like a Matthew Mulligan, or, you know, the Matthew Mulligans of the world for the Jets sign as a third string kind of Kellen Davis role but he actually blocks, because Kellen Davis was supposed to block 6'7", 270. He actually couldn't block anybody. Probably, you know, him and Copel's going against each other, I can imagine. It's probably terrible matchup. but now getting off a tight end, some names we heard with a linebacker. I believe, yeah, it was your brother who like texted us in a message and said like, hey, you guys heard about Steven Tulloch getting cut? We need to bring in this guy. You guys are idiots. Talk about him. I was like, yeah, have you heard about how much we talked about linebacker in the last month? But Steven Tulloch, since your brother brought it up, you know, 31 years old, 107 tackles, one sack, middle linebacker. He's been a 100-plus tackle guy for a very long time, all-around guy who could hit the running back and cover a little bit. But 31 years old, the Jets have Aaron Henderson. You signed Tulloch, Vinny, as your brother thinks you should?
I mean, if the Jets don't get Aaron Henderson, then he might be looked at. But no, I don't think that's a guy they have on their radar. But, hey, things can change. Like Jason said, free agency can lead to some crazy things. You know, going back to I'm going to mention Rex Ryan again, but when the Jets signed Bart Scott, remember Rex Ryan being on his doorstep at 12:01, I think it was. Some crazy things happened, but not saying Steven Tulloch is that type of caliber player, but let's just hope the Jets, you know, make the right moves and get a linebacker because, hey, linebackers outside of David Harris have not been pretty for the Jets the last few years, the last dozen years or so. I mean, the last half dozen. I mean, it's been a long time, put it that way. You know, hopefully the days of Demario Davis are over. I think they are. And the Calvin Pace days are over. This is a team that needs to get younger and faster. Steven Tulloch, like you said, 31 years old. Hey, if the Jets can get a guy who gets 100 tackles year in, year out, but that would be nice. But this is a team that needs to get to the quarterback, man. This is a team that needs help in that position. I think Steven Tulloch is secondary, even third or fourth option, you know, heading into free agency for this Jets team. I know my brother likes him a lot, but maybe. Hey, you never know. But I don't think
the best way to describe Vinny's brother is probably psychopath is the best word. but it's an interesting situation with Tulloch. I don't think he gets signed. You signed Henderson, who showed a lot last year. You get Aaron Henderson back for cheap. You already hear that the Jets want to sign him for cheap. And he wants to come back. So I think that's going to happen. I don't think you're looking at guys like a Tulloch. I heard James Laurinaitis, but he's also an inside linebacker who's going to command a little bit more money. And I forget where I saw it, to be 100% honest. And somebody was saying that James Laurinaitis is just as bad as Demario Davis. And I was like, oh, my God. Like, I feel like there's some Jets fans who just watch Jets games and no other football games. Because if you think James Laurinaitis equals Demario Davis, you are out of your mind. But another name, Vinny, that I actually heard, and it was an interesting one because I actually had to put some thought into it about an outside linebacker, was Junior Gallette, who was obviously with the Redskins last year.
Yeah.
He signed a one-year $745,000 contract. He had some problems with the Saints, obviously, but he was very good with the Saints. Where I believe it was last year in 2014, he got like 10 sacks. And the year before that, he had like 11 or 12. So 2 years, I believe he had 22 sacks. So he was playing pretty well with the Saints. He started to make a name for himself. And then he got into some trouble with them, with the coaches, domestic violence charges. And this was right after he signed his four-year, $41 million extension. So what do you think about Junior Gallette, 27-year-old guy, 5 years played, but has been in some trouble with the league and with his teams, coming off a big injury last year? Are you looking at a guy like that, or do you think Mac kind of steers away because, like we said, we're trying to get younger guys in here? While he is younger, he's still 27. But at the same time, you want to build a culture. And you, even if the Jets were 10-6 last year and they underperformed, to some people they overperformed, but whatever you call the Jets, they were a tight locker room team. Everybody was in love with LeBron Fitzpatrick and the receivers. Everybody was happy with Bulls. So do you risk bringing a guy like a Junior Gallette, or do you kind of think it's more important to build that core of guys who are trustworthy, stand-up type of dudes with Bulls?
Yeah, I mean, I think the obvious, you know, the moral, you know, of signing players to have, you know, what they think is doing the right things, and, you know, on and off the field, Junior Gallette is a guy who, you know, like you said, had that domestic violence case back in January of last year, and he was suspended 2 weeks for it. Then he gets signed, tears his Achilles, but this is a guy, his last 2 years in the league, has had 22 sacks combined. So, I mean, it's tough. Me, personally, I would say no. I mean, I'm not, you know, if a player has a domestic violence, I stay away from that as far as possible. Like, the Greg Hardy thing, you know, I would never have, you know, root for a player who didn't, you know, did something like that on a team. So I don't think Bowles is up for that. I don't think Maccagnan is up for that. I know some fans out there are going to be calling for his name just because of, you know, they see it as I don't care what he can do other than what he can do on Sundays. You know, I don't care what he does off the field. If he goes out there and gets a sack and a half a game or whatever the case is and help your team win, then sign him. I don't see it that way. But the Jets need help. I mean, he's probably the best available player out there. I don't know. I'm not sure, you know, what, you know, Maccagnan's thoughts or Bowles' thoughts are on this, but I can imagine them not being too high on a guy who's been suspended last year for, you know, for a domestic violence case. So it's an interesting name. You know, I saw some tweets about it too. I was thinking about that because this is a guy who, you know, back in 2012, 2013, when he's really coming into his own, was the guy who, you know, you had a double team. You know, you knew this guy was going to, you know, be on SportsCenter every Sunday night watching highlights because he was that type of player.
No, Odell Beckham, you know, and LeBron James were on there for 55 out of the minutes out of the hour, but so you might creep in.
Right. Yeah.
No,
but hopefully he's not missing it, put it that way.
Yeah, no, it dude, if he was the guy of 2-3 years ago, and he was coming to free agency, he would be getting a lot of money right now. I'm talking $13 million type of deal because he was really good. So if he's that kind of guy, then yes, he is the best outside linebacker coming into football. He has some questions though, obviously. Like, and for the people who are listening and, you know, well, tight end, they're not talking about Jimmy Graham and they're not talking about you know, all these guys, outside linebacker, Von Miller and running back with Matt Forte. We've talked about that. We're talking about some of the secondary guys now, so I think that's important, especially when the Jets, you look at the Jets' cap space, their cap situation. The Jets are going to be looking at more of the second, third-tier type of free agents than the first-tier guys. We're not getting the Revises, the Cromarties, all these guys. It's not happening, the Brandon Marshalls. So it's good to talk about some secondary guys. And the last secondary guy I want to talk about, who actually Nick brought it up to us, and he was saying, you know, Connor Barwin, a guy we've mentioned but mistakenly, just as a good name of a good outside linebacker who would be good for this team, a guy like that. He was asking us, you know, would you actually want Connor Barwin on this team? The Eagles, obviously, you know, they're running a 4-3 now, and he was a 3-4 outside linebacker, so Connor Barwin, 29 years old, last year, 54 tackles, 7 sacks. He played 15 games. He was decently healthy. He's been pretty healthy throughout his entire career, so that's consistent. He still has 3 more years on his contract, Vinny, which could be a problem too unless the Jets feel like restructuring that. $6 million next year, $7 million the next year after that, and $8.5 million after that, but no, none is guaranteed, so you could rework that pretty easily. Do you look at a guy like Connor Barwin, maybe trade a fifth, a sixth, a seventh round pick for him, maybe a fifth or a sixth, because he's not a scheme fit anymore, or are you looking away from Barwin? Because his cap money's not huge, $6-8 million, and as we talked about, if you're with Jason, if you're an outside linebacker in free agency, it's either that you're kind of just bad, or you're going to be ridiculously overpaid, Justin Houston, Von Miller type of guy, whatever it may be. Are you looking at Barwin?
I mean, I'm just thinking about that last game when we're up there in Buffalo and we're seeing Calvin Pace try to run after a quarterback. And I'm just thinking Connor Barwin, he's 29. He'll be 30 in October. I know he's not as slow as Calvin Pace because, I mean, those players, it's hard to find someone slower than Calvin Pace at that position. But Connor Barwin, I mean, I like him. Personally, I would love him on this team just because – you talk about a guy who he has 40, I think it's what, like 45 career sacks. He's still young, relatively, you know, young. He's 29. He still has a few years left in a tank. And when you look at
his
team,
it's not running back. You know, if it was running back 29, it's a little bit more worrisome. But you start to worry with outside linebackers 31, 32, 33. So you can definitely get at least, I'm saying, another 2 years of him towards the end of his prime, you know, dipping into that area right now.
Yeah, exactly. Because when you look at this team, when you look at the quarterback, let's say Fitzpatrick's back, he's 33. You look at Brandon Marshall, he's going to be, you know, 31, 32 years old. And you look at Revis, and you look at some of these players. I mean, if you can get a guy, like you said, you know, getting that contract down, if you can get Connor Barwin on a cheap 2-year deal, then you do it. Because even if you go that way in the draft, even if you want to draft a, you know, outside linebacker, and, you know, which I think they should, and, you know, improve at the position, no other better fit than bringing in a guy who has done this for numerous years. And if you can get a guy like Connor Barnes who can really, I think he would really gel in the locker room, because this guy, when playing in Philadelphia, he would actually, I remember seeing a 30 for 30 or a ESPN 60 for 60 on him when he would ride his bike to work. He would drive through like the ghetto streets of Philadelphia, the back streets of Philadelphia on his bike. And he would build up, and it's pretty crazy. If anyone has time, you should go check this out. It's only like a 5-10 minute video. He's a guy who, you know, went up and helped build all these playgrounds for, poor neighborhoods. So he's a guy who would be one of a leader on the team, and he's probably a leader out there in Philly. And if he can get him on this team with the guys like Brandon Marshall, guys like Revis, I think that locker room would gel. And you know, when you like who you're playing with, I mean, just going from our own experiences, you know, going, even though if it was high school, you know, if you liked who you play with, you know, you not only do you have more fun, but you have more success. You know, we weren't that much successful in high school, but when we were, it was because we liked who we were playing with. We respected each other. You know, if you bring in guys who have domestic violence cases, the guys who have been arrested for, you know, all these drugs and whatever the case is, when you have guys who can lead and guys who have led in their careers and you bring them in, they just gel together really well on a team. I think Connor Barwin would be, you know, one hell of a guy to bring in for this Jets team, considering, you know, what this roster has intact right now.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. I would love to bring Connor Barwin in, and that's why I've been staying away from these tight ends, these expensive running backs, mm-hmm. the Matt Fortes, so that if a situation did come about where, you know, the Jets are already trading their 6th-round draft pick for, you know, or what they got for Fitzpatrick. So if you're trading a 5th or a 7th or whatever it may be for a guy, Connor Barwin, who could probably come here just like Brandon Marshall for another, you know, 2-3, maybe 4 good years, and then maybe they're on their way. But like you said, about Junior Gallette, people kind of just think like it's Madden where you don't really have a locker room. You just go out and you play, and it doesn't matter. It's all about your overalls and all that stuff. But the locker room really does matter. So Junior Gallette's not a good idea. But a guy like Connor Barwin, who you said, you know, riding his bike to the back streets, et cetera, I think he'd be a good guy to come into this team. And you can't say that the locker room doesn't matter, because look how much of a difference I think Brandon Marshall made on this team this year, this offense, their connection with Decker, with everything. If it was just a random guy, let's say a guy in his prime, a Dez Bryant, and obviously Brandon Marshall's no he's not Jesus, but he was pretty damn good this year to the Jets support fans organization. We didn't hear anything bad about him. But if you bring like a Dez Bryant in here, I think the connection's not the same. So bringing a Connor Barwin in for the defense to help that front seven out, I think, would be a big piece. He'd be one of the oldest guys there with David Harris. So I think that would be nice, bring him in for a 5th-round pick. And then let's say you trade Wilkerson, which we've been talking about. So now you have Connor Barwin at outside linebacker, and then you sign a guy, Travis Benjamin. You sign Travis Benjamin for your kick returner / fourth receiver, and then in the draft you get a – you know, Ronald Stanley as your new right tackle. And then in the second round or with the first round, you get Wilkerson, you take a quarterback. Second round, you get a freaking outside linebacker. So there's a lot of things that can happen. It's so hard to predict everything that's going to happen right now. We're not even into free agency, so we can't even talk about the draft, really. So I do want to start talking about the draft a lot more after we do free agency. But to predict the draft and what the Jets will do in the draft, other than outside linebacker and offensive line, is going to be very hard without free agency coming. So we'll get more into that next week. We'll have some results of the combine. So it's going to be an interesting week next week. And like you said, we're getting into the thick of it now. Now we're talking about contracts, guys available. Soon we're going to be able to sign them, and then soon we'll sign them and get into the draft. So exciting times for Jets fans, for Jet Nation Radio. So this is the end of the episode. We appreciate everybody listening. All of you who do listen, like I said, we thank Jason from Over the Cap. Go check out his work. Go check out Glenn's work at AceFan23. Go check out the JetNation.com forums. Lots of topics and a whole bunch of interesting things on there. We thank Nick for producing the show every single week. The guy, the silent killer behind the scenes type of guy. Vinny, any last words? Hopefully your Knicks can actually beat my Nets for the second time this season.
Who cares, man?
109-98.
Cares?
Let's go.
Who cares, man? It's college basketball season. It's my scene hall, baby. Big game this Thursday versus Providence. So they win. They got five games left, baby. They haven't made a tournament since 2006. Then if they got five games left, they got to win. They got to win three of those. They win three, they're in the tournament. So right now, you know, things are pretty good sports wise. You got that going. Baseball's around the corner, but hey, football. like you said, we're getting to the thick of things. You know, we're talking every week about, you know, about the same, you know, same positions. But, I mean, it's going to be reality very soon. We're going to, you know, like you said, we're going to see the combine very soon. We're going to see all these players starting to go places, and it's going to be fun, man. It's fun. You know, we like doing this. You know, I hope, you know, it sounds like we like doing this because, we like hearing what the fans have to say. We like bringing in guys like Jason. We like talking to everybody, you know, because this is, you know, we're a fan of the game. We're a fan of the Jets, and it's a Tuesday night in February. Like you said, it's freezing rain down where you're at, and, you know, we're freezing out here. So it's fun. It's just fun to talk about this kind of stuff. So, hey, you know, another week of a great episode of Jet Nation Radio. So we thank everyone, obviously. But, hey, man, it's getting close. Mm-hmm. It's getting closer and closer every day. You know, it feels like yesterday that, you know, we were out there in Buffalo. But, hey, that was already almost 2 months ago right now. So, hey, time is flying by, man. That's crazy. Time is just flying by. And, you know, hopefully it flies by a little more quicker.
It's already been 2 months since the worst day of my life. Wow, that's crazy.
Oh my God, terrible.
like you said, you know, we're talking a lot of outside linebacker and defensive line, the main guys, quarterback right now. But once we get into free agency, then and some of these guys get signed, we'll start talking about some secondary needs. You know, the middle linebackers, the depth corners of the world, the receiving running backs, whatever it is. But it's going to be exciting. Like I said, the combine's coming soon. And I just believe Vinny was a little salty about his Knicks, that he was talking so much crap, and then Derek Fisher was dating people's girlfriends and getting punched and leaving the team.
Man,
now Jackson, everybody wants him gone, and people want Carmelo gone. So, but interesting time. You know, Nets are terrible, so that's okay. The Mets are being talked about right now as freaking World Series contenders, and they have to get there for not to be a disappointment. That's
down.
Awesome.
Settle down, baby.
The Devils are doing it. So, you know, good time in sports. We appreciate everybody listening. Like I said, Nick, we thank you. We thank all the fans. We thank Jason. And we will talk to you guys next week. Have a good one.